again, that quickly gets you a label as the teacher's pet, as a brown noser, all those kinds of things. So very quickly I was labeled because of the actions that I had, and kind of became an outcast to a certain degree. Started being made fun of, all these different things, which carried through into high school, that I just, you know, I didn't quite fit in with the rest of the people there. I was different. Life was different. So that just goes to show a little bit of what it means to live differently. Now, of course, that's in a public school setting and as a child, but these things do carry forward into our workplaces and into the different aspects of our life. And so we're no longer to live like the world. That's something that Peter tells us in 1 Peter chapter 4. If you don't have a Bible, there's Bibles at the back. I wasn't exactly sure where I was going to be reading the different parts of this passage, so none of it's actually on the screen this week. So if you need to grab a Bible, feel free to slip back to the Welcome Center and pick one up. And if you don't have a copy of the Bible, you're welcome to take that with you today as well. So if you have a Bible with you, you can turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. And we're going to read the first part of that that chapter together here. So 1 Peter chapter 4 begins saying, "Since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same intention. Whoever has suffered in the flesh has finished with sin, so as to live the rest of your earthly life, no longer living by human desires, but by the will of God. You have already spent enough time in doing what the Gentiles like to do, living in licentiousness, passions, drunkenness, revels, carousing, and lawless idolatry. They are surprised that you no longer join them in the same excesses of dissipation, and so they blaspheme you. But they will have to give an account to him who stands ready to judge the living and the dead. For this is the reason the gospel was proclaimed even to the dead, so that though they had been judged in the flesh, as everyone is judged, they might live in the spirit as God does. The end of all things is near. Therefore be serious and discipline yourselves for the sake of your prayers. Above all, maintain constant love for one another, for love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaining. Like good stewards of the manifold grace of God, serve one another with whatever gift each of you has received. Whoever speaks must do so as one speaking the very words of God. Whoever serves must do so with the strength that God supplies, so that God may be glorified in all things through Jesus Christ. To him belong the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen." So we'll unpack that a little bit here and just kind of take a look at what some of those things mean. Well, our actions reflect the values of God. The things that we do are to reflect God's will. Peter talks about that in verse 2. He talks about that how our actions are to follow along with what the will of God is. He then brings up the idea that this will cause others to notice. That as we live our lives, because our lives are different than those around us who aren't followers of Christ, people will notice that our lives are differently, are different. I've got a quote here that just kind of talks a little bit about that. The first part's a little complex, so bear with me in that part. "In our pluralistic age of globalization, issues of multicultural pluralism are creating an ethos similar to that of the polytheism Peter faced. And all that to say, everything spiritual seems acceptable, except the exclusive claims of the gospel of Jesus Christ." So in the world that we live in, we can see that all around us. We engage with people, and you know, everyone's talking about being tolerant, about living in ways that that we accept what other people have to say and believe. But when it comes to Christianity, there's some hostility towards that sometimes. There's the aspect that, well, you know, because you're promoting this exclusive view, we don't want to accept that. So there's tolerance, but to a certain degree, when it comes to Christianity. So our lives are different. And God will judge our actions. God talks about that in, Peter talks about that in verses 5 and 6, that God judges the actions that we have, that as we live, it's important for us to be careful and to understand what we're doing, because ultimately we'll be judged for the way that we lived our lives. And that is something that Peter brings out in this passage. Peter then talks a little bit about needing to consider our relationships, to look at the way that we interact with one another. Life is short here on earth. There's many references to that in the Bible, that you know, our time here is like grass that withers, that you know, in the span of eternity, our time on earth is limited. And so Peter tells us that we need to be disciplined and have a clear mind. Another translation of that clear mind is to have a sober mind. So that's, again, something that we need to take seriously. The way that we live our lives needs to be disciplined. And when we consider a lot of what happens in amongst other people in the world, discipline isn't always something that's a high value. To live a disciplined life is something that is unique to Christians to a certain degree, that we need to be living in this way that's different from other people. Another thing is that we need to have a sober mind. And again, that's something that isn't always something that other people who don't follow Christ, that this aspect of a sober mind isn't always there. Peter then also talks about the need to love each other well, that our love can cover a multitude of sins. And he's not saying that it covers it as like being able to sweep it under the carpet and cover it that way. What he's talking about is the fact that our love for one another, if it's truly love that we have for one another, that allows us to interact in such a way that we don't have sins towards one another. That if love is the overriding theme, then we won't be facing these tensions. Another quote that I found in some of the research that I was doing for this says that Peter warns against, Peter says that by definition, love is not warm, fuzzy feeling, is not a warm and fuzzy feeling, but means treating others in the Christian community in such a way as to promote unity and to avoid and or overcome behaviors that destroy relationships. That's what needs to characterize the love that we have for one another. Peter then also talks about showing hospitality to one another, that we need to show hospitality to one another without grumbling or without complaining. And this, again, is something that Peter talks about in the sense that Peter warns against grumbling or complaining in connection with hospitality, because whenever hospitality is offered, there's always the possibility that it may be exploited unfairly. And so in connection with love, we need to be willing to show hospitality, even if it isn't necessarily received in the right way, even if it is used and abused to a certain degree. But if love is the overriding theme, then it shouldn't be used and abused. So there's these two things kind of working together in that way. And we need to serve each other with our gifts. Peter goes on and talks a little bit there about gifts, that we need to serve each other with the gifts that God has given us. And so in that, what we see is that is another quote that I found that that talks a little bit about this. And it says, "The church is to be that alternate society where Christians find a place when shunned by unbelievers who live by different values. In a hostile world, the church is to be a place of safety and well-being for its members, a place where common beliefs unite more than differences divide." So again, this needs to be something that characterizes us, that we need to be there for one another, we need to support one another in the suffering that we may endure, that as we live and we face opposition, we can be a community that supports one another, that stands behind each other. Because the worst thing is someone who is suffering and has no one to back them up, no one to stand alongside them, to support them, to love them, to care for them. And so Peter is reminding us that we need to be doing that for one another, particularly when we suffer. So you might be asking, well, what are my gifts? I don't know what my gifts are, and this passage doesn't really seem to give me a whole lot of guidance on what my gifts might be. Well, we all have gifts from God to use, and Peter identifies two broad types of gifts that we have. He says that we have gifts of speaking and that we have gifts of serving. And so these are two broad categories that include a number of things that come in underneath them. Each of us has a unique set of gifts that God has given to us and calls us to use and to steward well. So one of the things that we need to be doing with our gifts is to be using them in such a way that we are serving one another more than just on a Sunday, more than just in church, but these gifts are things that permeate the whole of our lives. These need to be things that we live out in our everyday occurrence, in our everyday situations, in our workplace, in our social interactions with others. In wherever we find ourselves, we need to be using these gifts. Well, on your seats this morning, or on some of the seats around, there's a handout that just talks about a way to understand some of these gifts. And what's on your seats there, those are a little bit more complex way of going about it. It involves you to sit down and take half an hour to an hour and to go through a number of questions. It was originally designed in a seminar that Ken Redant, who is the one who wrote this, was presenting. And so the front page talks a little bit about a conference and that sort of thing. So you can kind of ignore those parts because this isn't the same context that was originally used in. But the front page does contain some aspects that will help you understand a bit more about gifts, and also talks about some of the biblical passages that list out some of the different giftings. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that the Bible doesn't provide an exhaustive list of gifts. It doesn't say these are the only gifts that there are and that you need to figure out which ones of these you have. Each of them are different examples of gifts based on the context that either Paul or Peter or whoever was writing is writing to that group and explaining some gifts for their particular context. Another thing, in your info sheet, there's an insert that at the bottom, there's a number of questions, but then below that are resources. And two of them, they're online resources that you can take a look at. One is a personality profile. If you understand your personality, that helps you to understand what you're naturally gifted in, what areas you have as gifts. And so there's a free one that you can take online. You have to register for the site. I didn't get too many emails when I registered to take it, so it shouldn't be a big deal. But if you're interested, you can take it, and it's basically a free DISC test that you can take online. It gives you a limited understanding of how that plays out for you. And then if you want, you can purchase the full report that they would give you for doing the DISC test. But that's another way that you can understand a bit of your gifts. A third way is on that resource list is a website that allows you to take a spiritual gifts inventory. And that's what's traditionally been done in the church to understand gifting, is to take a spiritual gifts inventory. One of the things that I say with that is that gifts, as far as I view them, are things that kind of change, that they aren't static, this is my gift set for my whole life. But as we grow and develop and have different experiences and interact in different ways, our gift set kind of changes and we adapt and we become better at different things, and some things, you know, we don't maintain as well. So that's something that you can take a look at as well. But, you know, again, I just caution you not to look at it as this is what I'm gifted in for the whole of my life. The next thing I just want to have us take a look at is, well, how are God's gifts different from my natural gifts? Like, what's the differentiation here? Like, when I hear this, I think, well, I'm gifted in different ways. Like, what makes my gifts, as you're talking about them, different from what any other person has as gifts or abilities? You know, what's the difference here? Well, God is their source. God is the one who provides us with our gifts. Peter talks about that here in the passage when he says that we speak as if we're speaking the words of God. So God is our source. We need to be looking to God. We need to have God as our, as the person who is enabling us in our speech. And we're to serve with the strength of God. So the strength needs to come from God in the things that we do. And that's another way that that our gifts are different from natural abilities. Because when we see God as the source of these things, it changes the way that we interact with them and the way that we think about them. Another way that they're different is that our gifts need to be used to glorify God. The gifts that we have need to then glorify God. The things that He's entrusted us with, the things that we have, all come from God, and so they need to glorify Him. We need to use them to reflect back to Him. And in that way, they're also an act of worship to God. Sometimes we get locked into thinking of worship as the songs that we sing, that's just, you know, that's what worship is. But worship is much bigger than that, and it encompasses all of our life. Worship involves the things that we say, the things that we do. And so in that way, we need to be worshiping God through these things and through the gifts that He's given us. Another quote here that I have is that to glorify God is to praise or worship God. The point of the doxology in Peter's passage here, that last verse that we read earlier, is that the ministry of Christians to one another counts as authentic worship towards God as well. If it is done well, with words from God, or out of the strength God provides. The mention of God, for the third time, in half a verse, makes the God-centeredness of Peter's brief advice on mutual relationships in Christ, in Christian congregations, unmistakably clear. That God needs to be at the center of everything that we do. And again, that's what makes Christians unique. Because our gifting comes from God. That God should be the center of everything. God provides us. God created us. God provides us with things that we have to use. And so He needs to be at the center of that. And the thing is, our gifts need to be the reason that we suffer to a certain degree. It's in the things that we do that are different from the world that cause us suffering and that cause us pain. One of the things that we need to understand, though, is that in North America, we don't always have a great understanding of suffering. We're in a culture that is built on Judeo-Christian principles. And so for a long time, that has helped us to avoid a lot of pain and suffering because what we believe has generally been the laws of the land and that sort of thing. And so a lot of people up until the last half a century or so have been involved in church for the most part and have had a Christian understanding to a certain degree. But now we're kind of moving into a time where that's changing a bit. And we can learn a lot from different parts of the world where Christians suffer in physical ways, in many different ways. If you think of China and the Christians who are in China, it's illegal for them to have services and essentially to be Christians in China. And so a lot of them suffer. There's a number of Christians who are in jail in China for their faith, and they suffer physically, either through beatings or through torture in different ways, and in other parts of the country as well. Where Christianity is heavily persecuted. And that's something that has come throughout the Christian history, has been this aspect of persecution and suffering. And when Peter is writing this, he's writing to a church that isn't well understood by the society around them. And so they're facing this persecution and this suffering. And so this is something that we need to take into consideration, that as we live differently from the people around us in the will of God and in what God has gifted us and called us to, that can cause us suffering. Peter then continues on, and we'll read the rest of the chapter here just to get a sense for what the rest of this passage is about and just some of the other things that Peter has to say. And Peter begins the passage talking about suffering. He then talks a bit about here about gifting and about the need to have love and hospitality. And then he goes back to suffering. And in a certain, in some senses, he's kind of recapping the whole book, the whole letter so far. But he talks about suffering, and it relates to this aspect of gifting. And so let me just read this here for us. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal that is taking place among you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice, insofar as you are sharing Christ's sufferings, so that you may also be glad and shout for joy when his glory is revealed. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed because of the Spirit of glory, which is the Spirit of God, is resting on you. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, as a thief, a criminal, or even as a mischief maker. Yet if any of you suffer as a Christian, do not consider it a disgrace, but glorify God because you bear his name. For the time has come for judgment to begin with the household of God. If it begins with us, what will be the end for those who do not obey the gospel of God? And if it is hard for the righteous to be saved, what will become of the ungodly and the sinners? Therefore, let those suffering in accordance with God's will entrust themselves to a faithful Creator while continuing to do good. So Peter here talks about the fact that in our suffering, we need to continue and to do good. He also raises the question, though, is your suffering for the appropriate reason? And Peter goes through a number of things here. And he starts out with something that probably doesn't apply to any of us here. He says that suffering must not be because of murder. And I'm assuming that that shouldn't be a problem for us here. We shouldn't be... I don't imagine any of us are suffering because of having committed murder. Then he talks about theft and says that our suffering shouldn't be because of theft. Well, that may or may not be an issue for some people here. That may have been something that may have taken place, but again, that shouldn't be the cause of our suffering. He then talks about other crimes, that criminal activity, that shouldn't be the reason for our suffering. And again, if we consider speeding to be a criminal activity, that may or may not apply to some of us here. But then he goes on, and his last word is a little bit different. He talks about mischief making. As my translation has it, as different translations render it a little bit differently. Essentially, what the original word is getting at here is that it's involving oneself in the affairs of others. Basically, putting your nose where it doesn't belong is what Peter's getting at here. That we shouldn't suffer because we're meddling with other people's business. And so that one hits a little bit closer to home, that, you know, perhaps we're suffering because of the way that we're living in relation to others. And so, again, that kind of looks back to that whole issue of needing to have love for one another and hospitality and dealing with things properly in that sense. Well, in all of this, you might be saying, well, okay, it's an aspect of suffering. I don't know. That's not what I signed up for when I became a Christian. I didn't anticipate this aspect of suffering. No one really explained that aspect to me. Isn't Christianity supposed to be about God's blessing? Isn't that what Christianity is about? God blessing us and providing for our needs? Isn't that what God has in store for us? Doesn't the Bible speak about comfort and blessing? That's what I've been taught, right? That God wants to pour out his blessing on us, and he wants to comfort us. Comfort the mourning and the hurting. What about the things that I've read? I've read about blessing as an indication of my faithfulness to God. Where does that fit with this aspect of suffering? And what about when Jesus talks about his yoke being easy and his burden being light? Where does that fit in with this? Isn't it kind of lunacy to think of choosing to suffer? Like, why would anyone want to become a Christian if suffering is something that's to be expected? Like, if we take what Peter's saying here, and he's saying that Christianity means suffering, well, why would anyone choose that? Why would we engage in something that's going to cause us to suffer? And, you know, I've also heard this health and wealth gospel, like this health and wealth message. You know, what about that? What about this aspect that God's going to provide for my health, provide for my needs, provide for me and bless me in financial ways too? Like, where does that fit in with all of this? Well, those are all very valid questions and things that we need to consider. Well, when we look at it, we come back to the idea that suffering isn't God's intention. That's not what God intended for humanity. And our rational inclination is for peace and security. That's something that kind of is an inner aspect of everyone. We naturally try to avoid pain at all costs. We try and live in such a way to avoid suffering. That's what's natural to us. So when we look at it, though, from the perspective of the Bible, Christianity actually offers an explanation for human suffering. And when we begin and look at the beginning of the Bible, suffering was absent from Eden. In the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve lived in paradise. They lived in a place with no suffering, where there wasn't this aspect of suffering. And that's what God created the world to be. Suffering will also be absent in eternity. And when we read in Revelation and in some of the things that talk about eternity, God talks about there being no pain, about wiping the tears from our eyes, that heaven is a place that is free from suffering, from pain. And so the biblical message is that suffering is an expression of fallen humanity, that suffering exists because humans live in a world where we rebelled, where we went against God. And that goes into a whole other message that I won't be able to get into this morning, but when we look at it, God didn't intend suffering. And so you might be asking as well, well, okay, if suffering is an expression of fallen humanity, why is it that Christians suffer? Like, where does that fit in? Well, when we look at it, we're living in a way that aligns with God. And the world just doesn't quite understand what that means and what that looks like. They don't have that relationship with God. And so it's hard to understand what we're doing and how we're living. And so the natural thing, as children tend to learn quickly, is that, you know, if someone's different, well, we make fun of them or whatever, and that tends to play out. And so that's why a lot of the suffering and the persecution happens of Christians, because they're living differently. They're living in a way that other people just don't quite understand, don't quite get. And ultimately, God longs to set things right. He longs to bring us back to Him. And so God redeems our suffering. God takes the suffering that we experience and He redeems it. What Peter talks about here is that our suffering is temporary. He says that our suffering is something that only lasts for a time. It isn't something that continues on forever. And so, a quote that I found as well just talks about this and says, God has not abandoned the Christian who suffers. To the contrary, God is powerfully present in the experience of suffering for Christ. So when we consider that, God is here with us in our suffering. God has been there. And we're going to actually take a look at this in a few weeks when we get into a series leading up to Easter about the atonement and looking at the fact that God has been there, God has suffered, God has experienced through Jesus this aspect of suffering in His death and His resurrection. And so we will take a look at that a little bit down the road. But because of that, God identifies with our suffering, and God says and stands alongside us and says, I'm here with you and I know what it's like. I've been there. I know that experience. And so we can trust God. And we'll be blessed because of our suffering. Peter talks about the fact that we're to rejoice, that we're to be glad for the suffering that we have. Because our suffering is temporary, and it will be taken away when we live in eternity. And so this whole aspect that the way that we live now affects the way that we live in eternity. And so when we understand that, we get to understand that suffering now means an eternity without suffering. And that those who don't know God, unfortunately, I mean, there's this reality that there is suffering for them later. And so that's the promise that God gives us. Suffering in God's name is part of his will. And that's a little bit tough to get our minds around sometimes, that God actually wills that we suffer. And what this is actually saying is that God, in his plan, he uses our suffering for his good. And so, just another quote here, that the Christian who stands fast and suffers for the gospel is responding to an eternal reality that will outlast death and even history itself. That when we suffer, it's looking forward to a future without suffering. And so in this, we become agents of God's redemption. That we become people who God uses to reach out to others and to share his love, to encourage others. And so in the end of this passage, Peter says that Peter encourages us to continue to do good. Peter wants us to live our lives in such a way that we do good and that others will notice, and that allows us the opportunity, through the use of our gifts, through our love for one another, to then bring others to know God. That as we live our lives differently, as we engage in such a way that others see what is different about us, see the fact that we look forward to an eternity without suffering, that we can then invite others to experience God's redemption. And that's our task. Our task is to invite others to experience God's redemption. We want to use what God has given us, our gifts, our love, our hospitality, in such a way that we point others to God. That through our suffering, people question, you know, well, why is this person comfortable with suffering? Like, you know, it seems odd and it seems strange to people. But the reason for it is that God has a plan, that God is using our suffering to bring others to him. And just a quote, another quote that I have here is that Karen Jobes writes, it's easiest to do good when things are going well, when we're prospering and when we're healthy. But when we suffer as the consequence of doing good, how unreasonable it seems to live or to continue to do the very things that are causing pain. She says, continue to live as a Christian. Continue to observe appropriate social relationships. Continue to minister to one another in the Christian community. Do not let persecution and suffering deflect from your calling in Christ, because they are a part of this calling. And so as we live in this way, we show God's redemption. I'm going to invite Dan and the team to come back, and we're going to sing a few songs of response. And what we're going to do is, as part of this is just, there's some songs that we are somewhat familiar with that we have sung many times before, but I just want us to listen to the words and to consider what it means to live in such a way that our lives demonstrate and that through the suffering we can encourage others. And if you take a look at the insert that's in your info sheet there, on the back there's a song that I found in leading up to this Sunday, and it talks a bit about suffering. And this, I just want to read the lyrics of this song for us before we sing together here. It says, when I walk through suffering, let it be an offering, like a fragrance rising in the valley of shadow, not to waste my sorrow, but to trust and follow until the day When you wipe away every tear, you will hold me, carry me till that day. When you take away every fear, no more suffering. Who can imagine? So I'll trade my sorrows for the joy of serving you, sharing your tomorrow, with your comfort comforting, bringing hope from hope you bring, my whole life an offering. Until the day when you wipe away every tear, you will hold me, carry me till that day. When you take away every fear, no more suffering. Who can imagine that day? And that's what God invites us to be a part of as we live for him, so that we can have this eternity of no more suffering. So I invite Dan and the team to bring us with the songs of reflection.